Moncrief
on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, for nearly 50 years, Lally Eisenberg harboured a secret. Originally from Slovakia, he was sent to Auschwitz concentration camp. The inmates, those not chosen for extermination, were tattooed, and it was Lally who did the tattooing. It was even how he met his wife. Before his death in 2006, he told a story to the writer Heather Morris, the author of The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Heather, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Tell us about the circumstances in which Lally was first entered Auschwitz. As I understand it, he kind of offered himself to help save his family.
In so much as the Germans issued directives into the village or the town that he was living in, that every Jewish family had to hand over one child or young adult to go and work for the Germans.
Right.
So they didn't know where they were going.
Yeah.
But they had to hand over one child, and Lally gave himself up. He had a sister who he wouldn't let go. He had an older brother who was married with two small children, and to him there was just no decision to be made. He was going.
Yeah, and of course he probably didn't know what that actually involved. Did it work in the sense of, did it save his family?
It saved his sister. She was the only one who survived. We do not know what happened to his brother, his sister-in-law, and the two little boys that they had. We discovered through research after Lally had died that his parents had been taken into Auschwitz-Birkenau themselves, and they had been killed the same day they arrived there.
Oh, my word.
This was something that Lally didn't know, and I'm quite glad that we only found out after he had died.
Yeah. Now, when the Nazis first took him away, what did they have him doing?
He was taken straight to Birkenau, which was being built. It was in the early days of Birkenau. A few Russian prisoners of war were there and had built a few of the buildings, and his initial job was building the blocks for the future prisoners that were due to come in.
And when did he first come in contact with Pepin?
Within weeks of being in Birkenau, he got typhoid and should have died. One of the gentlemen who he was in the block with him saw him being thrown literally on the death cart to be taken to the crematorium, or where they were actually killing and burning the prisoners early on. And he came and took him off. He started to take him off the cart. Pepin was walking past and saw this, and so went and helped him, and helped him carry an unconscious Lally back into the block. And during the day, Pepin, for the rest of the week, came back and was bringing him water and trying to force feed an unconscious and semi-conscious man. He survived.
Mm. And at the time, Pepin was the chief tattooist.
Yes, he was. He had the title of tattooer or tattooist. He was an academic from Paris. I think Lally thinks his specialty was economics. But his politics had interfered with the Germans, and he was arrested and taken to Birkenau.
So he took Lally under his wing and taught him the skills of tattooing. At that stage, was everyone tattooed, or was it just specific prisoners?
Every prisoner that came into Auschwitz and Birkenau who was not going to be immediately killed, if they were to be kept, and it was all the young people, they would be kept for work. And so they were all tattooed, everyone coming in. The ones who weren't were those ones like Lally's parents who were brought there and immediately killed.
Mm. So what were the circumstances in which Lally took over from Pepin?
He turned up for work one morning and Pepin wasn't there. He waited and he approached the German officer who was in charge of the selections and the tattooing and asked where Pepin was. And he was simply told, "That's none of your business. You're the tattooer now." And it was as simple as that.
Yeah, of course, one could only assume what happened to the poor unfortunate man. During the years then when he was the chief tattooist, presumably he knew that there were other people that he wasn't tattooing and what was happening to those people.
Yes, he did, because he was there at the selection process when the ones who were going to be tattooed and designated to come to him, they were being selected and they were being sent to the left. And he was seeing all those ones being sent to the right. And yes, he knew their fate. It didn't take a rocket scientist to work out what was going on.
Yeah. Now, it did afford some advantages to him in that he was probably treated better than the standard prisoner.
Yes, he was. he was placed in his own room in a camp that was designated for the gypsies. Now, initially when he went into it, he was there alone. It was still being built. He was then put there, he was told, for his protection in case other prisoners saw him as being a prisoner who was getting some privileges they weren't and that he was going to be at risk. The reality was, every night or whenever he could, he was going back to his old block, to his old friends that he'd come in with, and that was a misplaced fear on the behalf of the SS.
And was he able to use his position to occasionally help some of those other prisoners?
Absolutely. He was given extra rations because certain prisoners, like the prisoners who worked, or the Sonderkommando, who were the prisoners who worked literally in the crematoria, they were better fed. They wanted them to have their strength for what they were wanting them to do. And there were a group of other prisoners who had positions outside of just the normal work who did get better, by better fed. I mean, he got two pieces of potato instead of one. He got an extra ladle of very weak soup. So I'm not talking about a three-course meal here.
Yes, indeed.
What it also did was it gave him a little bit of freedom of access to move around the camp because he was recognised by the SS as being the tetivera. And so he had that freedom of movement, and he used that to befriend some of the local Polish villagers who came into the camp and worked each day and then went home. It was a 9-to-5 job. They were paid. And by befriending them, he was able to get from them extra food. And I'm talking about proper food, sausage, chocolate, extra bread. And with that, he would just distribute it amongst all the men's camp initially because he wasn't allowed anywhere near the women's camp. And, of course, when the gypsies came in, or the Roma, he also gave it to them, in particular to the children, because that was the only camp in Birkenau where there were actually families and children.
And one of the women that he helped was his future wife.
Yes, indeed. On the day that she was transferred from Auschwitz to Birkenau, she was lined up to have the number on her arm re-tattooed because it had faded. They had used a different way of tattooing in the early days. And she came along, and at the same time as she approached him to have her arm re-tattooed, and he had not been looking at the girls, he hated the idea of defiling these young girls, and so he wouldn't look at them. But at the moment that she handed him her arm to be tattooed, one of the so-called doctors also stood beside Lally and started roughly examining her with his hands, forcing her head from side to side, running his hands over her body. And Lally found her tense up, and he thought she was going to say something. And at that moment, he looked up and literally looked into her eyes, and he just mouthed, shh, making sure she didn't say anything. Now, she looked back at him, and that was it.
Yeah, and they kept in contact as best they could while she was there. But at some future point then, didn't she disappeared, and he didn't know where she was.
Well, she was taken on a death march 2 days before the Russians liberated Auschwitz. That would have been the 25th of January 1945. So she was taken out with all the women were taken out 2 days prior to the last day for a death march. And she had to escape from that, but Lally didn't know that she'd escaped. Well, he says he did. He said he would know if she hadn't survived. And to him, she was still alive.
And so when they did eventually meet, it was purely accidental, from what I understand.
Well, yes, it was. And it sounds like a Hollywood moment, but
yes.
I didn't make it up. He was looking for her. He was out there looking for her every day at the train station, at the prisoners who were coming back, trying to find somebody who knew her. And it was only when he was told, look, why didn't you go and register her name with the Red Cross? The Red Cross in Bratislava at that time were taking the recording of people who had returned or from people who were wanting to find somebody. He had bought a tiny little cart and a horse, and he was literally driving or riding his horse down the street in Bratislava. And she saw him. She was walking down the street with two of her friends. And they saw this strange-looking cart with a horse and a man on it. And she saw him. And so she stepped out into the road in front of the horse.
How extraordinary.
And Hollywood moment, but
Hollywood.
It happened.
Yes. They were, as I understand it as well, they were imprisoned in Bratislava. How did they get out of prison there?
He was imprisoned in Bratislava. He had a successful business when they returned home. And for 2 years, they were leading and living a normal life of a young couple, newly married, setting up home. But he was involved also with other Jewish people in Slovakia, in Bratislava in particular, who were all donating small amounts of money to be smuggled to the state of Israel, the new state of Israel. And so he was part of that movement of trying to build up Israel and send money. And it wasn't any money, it was jewels, whatever they could get.
Mm.
He had a partner in his business, and his partner's marriage fell apart. And it was the angry ex-wife who went to the authorities and told them what it was Lally was doing. He was arrested,
yeah.
He was charged, and he was sentenced and imprisoned all within a week. And we actually have the documents, we were able to get them, with the charges that were laid and with the sentence that he was given of 2 years in prison.
And did he serve the entire
but
2 years?
He didn't do that.
Ah.
He didn't serve his time. Gita is a very resourceful woman. She is, that she was, and must never underestimate the strength of this young girl to survive also. And she was able to bribe a local judge, and they set up an elaborate plan to get him out of prison on weekend leave. And they did that by sending a Catholic priest to talk to him. He told me that he was sure it was a mistake when he was told that the priest was there to talk to him. But he met him, and the priest convinced the prison guards that he needed to hear his confession and they needed to leave. And the priest said to him, "You need to start acting like you're going crazy. Only by doing that can we persuade the authorities in the prison to get a psychiatrist to see you. Your wife has bribed a psychiatrist, and they will come and see you, and they will be recommending that you need to have weekend leave or you will totally go insane." So this elaborate plan was put into place, and he started acting crazy. Next thing, he's got a psychiatrist meeting with him who recommends he has to have weekend leave. And during that weekend leave, it was arranged, and they were smuggled out of Slovakia in the false wall of a truck that was headed to Vienna.
And eventually they ended up in Australia, where they lived the rest of their days. And through all those decades, very few people knew about his past or indeed how Lally and Gita originally met.
Only their friends, their close friends here in Melbourne knew.
Yeah. Did he feel, he must have had mixed feelings, I imagine, that he must have felt an element of shame, but at the same time he didn't really have much of an option.
Well, he didn't have an option. And what he felt is what I think anybody under those circumstances would have felt. And many of the other people I've spoken to here who survived there, they had survivor guilt. They survived, and so many didn't. And to live with that and find a way to try and have a normal life with that for a lot of the people from Auschwitz and Birkenau in any concentration camp. And I suspect today with anyone who is suffering through the conflict zones that are currently in play, to survive, you have a level of guilt.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary story. Heather Morris is the author of The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Heather, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. I appreciate your time.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.